Welcome, everyone, to our Radical Optimism event. My name is Carolyn Maplin. I am the Executive Director and Mutual Awakening Teacher. It is so wonderful to see you all. It is my complete delight. It feels so good to be doing this after 5 months of not being able to have a public event to welcome Patricia Albert, who is an internationally known spiritual teacher who's been teaching for actually over 50 years now in this domain. She is an internationally known best-selling author of Evolutionary Relationships, Unleashing the Power of Mutual Awakening, and the founder of the Evolutionary Collective, which includes a 7-day-a-week mutual awakening practice community that includes people from all over the world. So, with that, please join me in welcoming Patricia Albert.
All right, thank you, Carolyn. Yeah, this is exciting. So for those of you who have been, yeah, I know. For those of you who've been on in our community, even just on our list, you know, finding out you know, certain things that we're doing and the people that are already, you know, the range of being in as close as one can be, in my experience. It's been quite a journey. So, you know, I was not able to teach. We planned on doing this event in January. I had a resurgence of cancer that was very, very serious. And I could not function particularly and was about a month away from dying before they figured out how to reverse what was happening. So the fact that I have lots of energy and, you know, I'm in a very, very different place, as well as being on that liminal edge of death, which is always, you know, those of you who've had that experience, it's very unique and it's a very powerful one. I already have a fair amount of radical optimism just coming into this call on a personal level. So I'm doing well, you know, for those of you who have read some of the emails, and I'll be communicating further after next week, after I re-meet with the doctor to find out what my future looks like. So, but in the meanwhile, I feel really good. All right. So we only have an hour. There's, you know, as I've been preparing to do this with you all, you know, there's always like 10 hours or 12 hours worth of what I would want to be able to dive into with you. So I will do my very best to, you know, not only have there be a depth of connection and a depth of awakening here, but also I want to purposely leave certain things not completely understood that hopefully you'll be more curious about going forward, because there's no way that we can go into the depth of all of it. So radical optimism. Definitely, I am sure, you know, all of us who are paying attention to the world and our own inner experience, you know, it's a sort of a radical title to actually name any event. And what we're going to dive into is basically, you know, where one can stand, where one can come from and arise from, that actually is radically optimistic and not in some kind of spiritual bypass or Pollyanna individual perspective place that doesn't have a whole hell of a lot of power. So that's the intent. I want to start out with how to be together in this. The way that we work is very particular. So right now, normally when you get on Zoom, it isn't the same as if we were meeting at, you know, in a hotel, or we were meeting at a retreat center where you walk in the room expecting to give your full attention. I mean, maybe not so much anymore because people have their phones, but I think for the most part, expecting, you know, to be together in a very full way is what we need for the next hour. So if you can not only just not kind of move into whatever other distractions and kind of use me as your background, it's actually even more important, because even though I prepare and there are things that I want to share with you, I never know what's really going to happen. And it really is between us. So your listening, your being present, your being inside this with me actually evokes what is possible. I can't do that alone. I'm not a talking head. You know, that isn't one of my gifts. So we really are creating this together. So first off, if you can just, so there are many people here who have done the Mutual Awakening work and are in some of our programs, you already know this. But for those of you who are brand new, if you can just move your awareness, it's pretty simple, and just move it into my voice. So whatever you were paying attention to, including, you know, your own experience or what you think of all of this so far, just allow yourself to just kind of let your awareness locate in the unlocatable place of my voice. Okay. And if you're paying attention right now, you can almost feel something went a little more, there was more coherence almost instantly. And the nature of the people that are here, do you know what I mean? Like my saying that doesn't sound completely crazy. You know how to move your awareness and how to pay attention and give it to different places. So just stay with my voice and allow us to stay inside together as we explore this topic, okay? And from the inside, from being inside together instead of everybody in their own little box deciding things and comparing it to what you already know and all the things you can do by yourself. This is really about ultimately shared unity. It's about coming inside a kind of inner reality that is shared, not an inner reality that is alone. It's interesting. I think I see him. One of the people that has done the course shared on our Facebook, page that they had done, one of the ayahuasca kind of journeys. And, he was like coming out of it and experiencing an incredible oneness and this is ecstasy and this whole thing. And then at the end, when everyone was sharing what they experienced, he realized nobody was remotely in the experience that he was having. He realized he was really alone. And I thought, he just completely made my point, is that, that the profundity of what we can experience on our own is very different than this thing I'm just doing very rudimentary, I don't know what the word is, but on a very basic level right now, is just leaning in so that our awareness is actually finding the same spot, kind of like when you're listening to music. Sometimes everybody's like in a state of shared oneness of a sort. All right, so good. The other part of listening is that the messages and the things that I'm going to be sharing are really not more of the same. I mean, as Carolyn said, I've been teaching and I've worked with tens of thousands of people in the last 50 years. And I really am very, very familiar with and have taught many of the things that we've learned individually and in meditation and in our various journeys. What I want you to listen for, feel into, or let touch and resonate is something that you can't quite put your finger on. So when something new is occurring, when something is beginning to come into form, it's not the answer of what am I going to get out of it? Okay. So if you're listening for what am I going to get out of this, just put that aside. My experience is when you go deeper in consciousness or in evolution, you get more than you can imagine. So you don't actually need to worry about that. But like, what am I going to get out of it? Do I agree with it? Just see if you can listen for the subtlety. And hopefully I will say some things that when you hear them, you'll go, yes. It's almost like recognizing something that you maybe haven't quite put your finger on yet. So that we share as visionaries. Visionaries function that way. Things are not vivid and clear. They're like, you know, there's a certain quality of finding where something is coming into existence. Okay. So we will go there. Let me just see if there's anything else. And just one other thing is with Zoom, you know, some people, we were working with the in this dimension way before COVID. And there's, you know, as much as I love being with people in person, you know, because it's fun and you can go have a meal afterwards and all of the, you know, the wonderful things that we get to experience as human beings. But the consciousness that is evolving, you know, that is coming into existence had to have a medium that was simultaneous and global. And it's not, you know, the trouble we get into, you know, with the internet and Facebook and the various things is, you know, there's people in their separation, like, you know, giving points of view and opinions and people are bouncing off of it. And, you know, this is different. This is all in together from everywhere in this moment, which is a very different way to use the miracle, actually, that we can do that. So, you know, if there were ever modern day mystics are going to be practicing by being together as one from everywhere. You know, what is it? Everywhere all at once. So there's a value to learning how to really be inside together. So, okay. So we're going to speak a little bit about what radical optimism means. So first of all, radical is radical. You know, radical is extreme. It's something that it comes from the Latin verb, the radix, which means the root of something. And it is relating to affecting the fundamental nature of something. So it's sweeping, it's powerful, it's, you know, it's not gradual, it's not linear. And optimism is kind of the sense of what can happen that is the best option, the best outcome. And when you think about optimism, for the most part, we think about it from an individual point of view. Having the right, you know, like when you have cancer people, you know, if you say anything about, you know, death, you know, they're like, oh no, don't talk that way. And you know, you create what you say and, you know, what you believe and all of that. And I personally used to be quite good at, I mean, a friend of mine used to call me like a white witch. You know, I used to be really good at creating stuff. but there's something beyond that. There is something beyond that. There's something beyond your point of view or having a certain kind of intention or will as an individual. And I'm sure that all of us, you know, we're in the world now. And as much as you can close your eyes and meditate, or you can just be paying attention to your own family, or, you know, you can turn off the news and try to just stay inside a realm that has beauty and richness and nourishment. At this point, 8 billion human beings on the planet, we can't ignore that there are larger frequencies, there are larger things that are moving that are absolutely affecting all of us. And that was different 30 years ago, even 20 years ago, even 15 years ago, you could kind of ignore a little bit more of what was going on in the world. And at this point, you know, we're being moved differently. So I want to share. Some of you may be aware of this way of seeing, but I want to share about it from this optimistic perspective. So number one is people are oriented around what they care about, what their care and concern is. And if you're paying attention, you can pretty much see where people are oriented. So the first level of care and concern is egocentric. And I don't mean, you know, unhealthy, psychological, but just there are people that when you interact with them, their question is, what about me? You know, how does this support me? Okay, now we all have that to a degree, but there are people that is their focus, is a more egocentric level of kind of dealing with existence and dealing with other people. Okay, does that make sense so far? I mean, you can see it in yourself, you can see it in other people. Ethnocentric is the next level. So ethnocentric has to do with, which is very natural for most of us, is caring about your family, your friends, your tribe, you know, the people that you identify with. And your extended family or your chosen family. And ethnocentric can even relate to, you know, your religion, your particular culture, you know, where you have a real care and concern and a sense of identity with that realm. The one beyond that is world-centric. So world-centric, it doesn't mean you don't, you know, you have egocentric and ethnocentric. You don't not care about those things. But then you really start to identify with caring about the world and caring about what's happening in the world and, you know, how you affect it. And, you know, there are people that get more involved in how do we care about this earth and how do we care about all the people in it, right? I'm sure many of you have careers, you know, that have allowed you to be inside that level of care and concern consistently, okay? And I'm sure you're very frustrated, whoever you are. I'm sure you have a lot of mixed feelings about, you know, just the holding of that and the love of that and the caring and the frustration that I think most people experience in regards to that, okay? Now, there is one further. And that's where we're going to point to. So the one that's further, it's not better. You know what I mean? So don't go into a hierarchical, you know, don't go crazy on me around hierarchy. But, you know, there are differences in what we're paying attention to. And the one that's beyond that is called cosmocentric. So I'll just let you imagine what that is for a moment. The cosmocentric includes the world, but it's not only about Earth or only about your family or only about your culture or only about your, you know, how life is showing up for you. Cosmocentric has more to do with like these forces of, I call it evolution, forces of creation that are moving things forward. Some of you may be artists or musicians, or, you know, you're innovating in some area, you're a scientist. And if you're cosmocentric, you're more on that edge of flirting with, of fascination with what's next. You know, where is creation creating? If you're world-centric, often you're trying to create things that are practical, that will work in the world. Cosmocentric wants things to work in the world, but they're innovating. They're on that edge that I was pointing to before. And from a consciousness standpoint, from a, you know, a spiritual standpoint, from a, you know, being a human in this conversation, where I'm pointing to this radical optimism has more to do with being cosmocentric. Okay. And it's possible that I've just said something that you went, oh yeah, that is what I'm obsessed with. You know, I am obsessed with the creation of things, that where the newness is, and trying to facilitate that. For some of you, you might have been like, you know, I've really been paying attention to world-centric or something else. I can kind of feel that. Like you might not be living it yet, but it might be like, you know, there may be some value in letting that awaken in me. And there is. So I want to say, if there's any flirtation going on between cosmocentric and you, please flirt back. Say, come and get me. You know, so that dance starts to pull you, because humanity, you know, the like an evolution of the way we are human lives there. Okay. The optimism comes from there. It's pretty hard to be optimistic if you're world-centric, right? I mean, as hard as you try, you're like, well, if we do this and we do that, and you know, you get the money and the, you know, but it's like you're efforting, you know, it's an effort. And most of us know that even if we can calm ourselves down and feel good, you know, the world is still going in a certain direction that we don't have control over. And that we wake up every morning and there are different things going on. You know, it's not all negative at all, but we are in a transitional time, which is usually a little hard for us humans. Okay. So this cosmocentric, so I'm just going to place that one. I mean, we could go further into that, but just, I'm just going to place that, you know, I'm going to put that right here and just let that cook and flirt with you a little bit, because that's part of where this radical optimism has a chance to literally take over. Okay. And this cosmocentric dimension also has to do with coming together there, being together in that, just like in ethnocentric, you can be together as a family. It's kind of like the cosmocentric level of interpenetration and unity. Through a vehicle like this, we can have access to something that we don't have to make up and we don't have to talk ourselves into. There is something moving existence forward into the new that is alive and well, but you can't see it if you're not paying attention. And part of the paying attention is we need to do it together. You know, that's the extra problem. You know, trying to get two human beings to do anything together is already a problem. But doing it from where I'm going to keep pointing to, it literally feels like home. Like you feel not only optimistic, but you feel like this is where existence is headed. And this is where existence wants us to live. Okay. So this doesn't have to make sense, just as long as something feels alive. Okay. All right. So that's the cosmocentric conversation. Okay. The next one that I want to look at has to do with this time. So I want to speak a little bit about evolution. Many of you have heard me do this before, but feel into the reality that I'm presencing. This is not, you know, I'm not a school teacher. And I'm sure if somebody was teaching the story of evolution, they would do it, you know, amazingly and with lots of precision. And, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to give you a broad stroke so you can feel where this is moving and where you can align yourself. So one of the access points is not belief. But if you start to feel something, if I point to something and you're like, yes, some part of you goes, yes, yes, right. The alignment is what existence needs from you. It needs your alignment. It needs your attention. Unfortunately, evolution, since humans showed up on the planet with self-reflective consciousness and the ability to make choices, you know, we are dominating the evolutionary potentials of at least this planet. You know, the tigers have not taken over. But the humans have. So evolution, you know, that cosmocentric pull does need our attention. It does need our alignment. And like all good spiritual, you know, teachings, it's not going to happen your way. Any of you have ever been in a serious teaching of any kind, you know, we're like, well, you have a sense of how you want to do it, and you can't do it the way you want to do it. You have to do it the way it actually works. So there's always a degree of surrender. You know, there's always a degree of letting go and discovering how does one come into alignment so that something is actually happening that is real for you and for existence. Okay. So just let that sit for just a second. So your alignment is wanted. And part of what this hour is to point you to something that you can let be more of a North Star, let it speak to you. Discover what it takes to be on the edge of where existence is trying to take us. It's that or be a dinosaur. I mean, to be honest, I'm sure we can't see it in ourselves, but we can see it in other people, people that are identified with very early, old, narrow ways of trying to get the world to fit into that way of being, right? But we can't see in ourselves the fact that we're not fully aligned with where existence wants to go. Particularly those of us that have done a lot of work on ourselves, you know, what we've been doing for the last 50 years is not where it's wanting to take us at this point. And, you know, being a baby boomer and being old enough, you know, I have friends who are like older than me, you know, that are in their 80s and, you know, they're still working on themselves and their shadow and the him and it, you know, like it doesn't go away. It's like a never ending thing. And there's something else. I'm not saying that you don't do some of that, but there's something else that's trying to get our attention that has a different, it's made of something different. Okay. So, oh my God, sorry, half an hour. I'll never have enough time. All right. So this evolutionary piece has to do with part of this optimism. So just the very quick, like, you know, 2-minute version of evolution is from nothing, light was born, the Big Bang. And from light, matter was created. Now, that's already ridiculous. Light turning into matter should make you very optimistic. There's nobody here that could take light and turn it into a rock. I don't care how positively you focus and you work through all your issues, you know, you're not going to be able to do that, okay? And rocks, you know, so the geosphere was created, there was no life, and then the biosphere came into existence. So rocks turned into bunny rabbits, right? How does that work? Now there are some, you know, magicians that can pull a bunny rabbit out of a hat, but you can't pull a rabbit out of a rock. Life came from no life. More optimism. So you just have to have a wider view of what's really going on here. And once life was created in the biosphere, the moment humans could begin to think, they had some self-reflective consciousness. They weren't just like animals. You know, my cat, even though I have a conversation that he's thinking all kinds of things and has all kinds of feelings about me and the world and his food, you know, he's not self-reflecting probably. I'm not 100% convinced that I'm not sure what animals can do, but humans, until we had language and self-reflection and the ability to make choices, we were part of the biosphere only. And there's been a long evolution, a few million years, and we created the next evolutionary leap is called the noosphere. It's the thinking layer of the earth. And the thinking layer of the earth gave birth to all civilization, all language, every school that was ever built, every subway, every invention, every human created anything is the realm of the noosphere. Okay. And we think that's it. And that includes your spiritual work. Your spiritual work is, you know, you meditate this way and you close your eyes and you do that and you do the other thing and you align with the tenets of certain religions and various things. I mean, that's all the noosphere. It's all the thinking layer of the earth. And we do it in separation. We do it, you know, as Ellen is focusing on a way of knowing oneself and thinking differently. And I do it and somebody and Randy does it. but we're in our own individual incarnational journey. And part of that journey has light and dark in it. It has the ability to rise and fall. It has crucifixion in it. I'm not talking about religious crucifixion. I mean, I'm sure there are many people here who have been crucified by your family, by your ex-husband, you know, by the people in your community, and then resurrection, you know, and then being able to come to life again, hopefully without too much trauma. There is another leap, and it is utterly different. It is not through thinking. It is not through language, and it's not through witnessing or self-reflection or free will or choices or any of the things that we are growing and learning and experiencing. Like, that whole journey is in the noosphere. And to be honest, I don't think there's a lot of hope there. You know, the optimism there is sort of dwindling. More information is not necessarily going to give us a new world. No matter how brilliant people are, there's no leader. There's nobody who's going to be brilliant enough. No one's going to follow them anyway. So even if you had the most brilliant person, you know, everybody's so in their own worlds, we wouldn't align behind that anyway. And that whole thing is over. So there's another level of evolution that I call the spondosphere. It has to do with, I can't get into why that name, but it's literally made of something different, just like rocks are different than living creatures. And it's not because I said so, it's because the people that are listening, the people that are feeling into where is the future and how can I literally be aligned? How can I become a vehicle for that with others? As you enter into that with others, you start to discover senses are different. Everything's really alive. Like, you don't necessarily understand everything. It's almost like the biosphere. The silence comes back in without having to meditate and quiet your mind. But it's something's alive. There's love. There's new ways of being human that really are different. And the divinization of existence, you know, is what I will declare. The purpose of this next evolutionary leap is not civilization and individual development and the hero's journey and the heroine's journey and all of the, you know, I think of it, I have a son who was obsessed with video games. It's like that particular video game, you know, learning through experience and forgiving people and, you know, all the things that we've been, you know, we get points for certain things. Whatever that is, it's as different as rocks and rabbits. And there's a quality of being inside together in that same place, looking and going, yes, I see it. Yes, you know, we see from this almost the same eyes, even though my particularity is more enhanced than it's ever been. I don't have to fight to be unique at all. The post-ambivalence that I mentioned in the materials that we sent you, post-ambivalence is one of the descriptors that's in, like, if you do Maslow's hierarchy and you get to the transcenders, post-ambivalence is, it's like you're so spontaneous, you're not even thinking about yourself. Which is one of the things people are always trying to get to. They want to be in flow and they want to, you know, not be judging themselves. I mean, there's something that in this different domain that is natural to being inside together in this quality of shared unity that evolution is bringing forth. You become very unselfconscious. In fact, when someone asks you to really tune into what's going on with your root chakra, you just feel like you're being tortured. I mean, forgive me. I'm from New York, so you have to forgive that I can get a little challenging at times. But it just throws you into your head. And there's a flow. There's something that's happening as we are together in that post-ambivalent quality of being. connected to something that's bringing through a different potential that is utterly, radically optimistic. You don't even have to think optimism. You just see and feel and know the sense of connectedness and love. And you can see that all the things that are falling apart have to fall apart. For this to exist, you know, for a different, more innocent, you know, more pure way of being with one another, all the strategies and the, you know, mistrust and the boundaries and the, you know, the whole thing you need in the individual, and you need to know how to manage that, something is different. And the best, in my experience, of the many people that we have worked with, you know, as they begin to access this deeper connection with others, it's beyond the soul and its karma and its journey and its learning and its everything. It's like a pure connection together as one, and in particularity that literally feels pure, feels safe, feels innocent. That's why we watch all those videos, you know, like those animal videos, right? You know, and little babies and stuff, because we're like, there's some part of us that knows this innocence and purity is pulling at us. And you can't be innocent and pure in the noosphere, not particularly. I mean, we've all, you know, learned some lessons there. Okay. So I just want to leave it at that. There's a million more things, but, you know, there is this, you know, evolution itself, the next level of evolution is what radical optimism is. And we have access to it. So Carolyn, wherever you are, if people would like to ask some questions, let's do a little bit of that now. Yeah.
As a reminder to raise your digital hand, you can down at the bottom of your screen. Good. We have some people already demonstrating how to do that. So we'll go to Peter first.
Hi, Peter. You have to unmute. I can't hear you.
I think I'm okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, of course.
Thank you for that. I don't know you. I don't know anything about you. I'm here through Carl. I can't think of his name.
Solomon. Yeah.
And I basically was interested through your description of what you're calling radical optimism in a preview video, where you described it as sort of connecting with something deeper in existence that shows you something of its shape. I relate to everything that you say, and for me, it's been sort of a lifelong journey. But where I'm curious is that for me, actually, it's through connecting with the root chakra that I found the passage in.
Yeah.
It's kind of a paradox. You go down into the thing that is seems most animal or elemental, and then you pass through it to this connecting with the larger thing. And I like your word post-ambivalent. Could you comment on that?
Yeah. Have you read Carl's book about the nine waves of?
Yes. Okay.
So in his book, he mentions the work that I do in the ninth wave.
Okay.
So for you and for anybody who understands this, the eighth wave has to do still with our individual journeys, spiritual journeys, and you can become extremely free there. You can become enlightened.
But what I'm saying is that it's the passage through there away from the individual.
Well, not really. The ninth access to this divinization, like this different level, which doesn't have light or dark in it, actually, is not through one's own body or connection through the heart or through, it doesn't mean that those things aren't affected, but it's you and I, Peter, like leaning in together and accessing a different source of self. And the source of self is not the incarnational source, you know, the one that lands here and has certain things from family dynamics and DNA and various other things. It's literally a different source that I call the origination point. Well, and when you learn how to come from there together, there's a different, there's something else that happens.
Okay. Well, that
makes sense.
No, but okay. Fine. I just have to go on my experience and continue to follow it. Everything that you're saying, I relate to, except for that last point.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to do it to find out if what I'm saying is real.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand. So, I sort of, not to argue the point, but I also might say the same to you.
Yeah, I've done.
You know, there's a certain point when we try to describe these things,
right?
And we try to create a system that then we deliver to other people, where then that may in itself de-dimensionalize them or whatever. Right. Anyway, but I appreciate what you're saying. It right. doesn't really matter. But
that's okay.
Thank you.
All right. And just one other thing is, like I said, we've only got an hour, but there was 4 years of being with someone inside the reality that I'm pointing to. And then he died. So there is a livingness that is what matters in this next level. Yeah. Carol.
Speaking of, that's a perfect segue into a question that Vicky asked.
Okay.
She said, I've read your book and heard you talk about the special relationship in your past.
Yeah.
In a cosmic sense, I believe there are no special relationships, but I'm struggling not to want a special relationship in my life. Any advice?
Oh, I think you should definitely want it. I'm all for it. You know, that's a longer conversation, but there are different potentials in relationships, all which are beautiful of their own accord, but there are ways in which to be sort of cosmocentric together that is pretty extraordinary. And I think if that's something that you want, you should want it. Don't talk yourself out of it, no matter what anybody says. Okay. Carol?
I'm so grateful to have this opportunity to ask you this question. I'm also totally moved and delighted to hear your articulation of what I believe I have lived all my life. And even as a teen, I think I was spontaneously, you know, graced with this, you know, connection with the origination
point. Yeah.
Yes. But I just missed the actual term that you used for this new sphere, respondosphere. What was the term?
Spondosphere.
Spondosphere. Delightful. Thank you so much.
Okay. Sandra? In here?
Hello?
Yeah, there you are. Okay.
Oh my gosh. I have to tell you, I am up in Truchas, New Mexico. I'm new to this. I am also like Peter from Carl, who I don't even know yet. But the funny thing is when I was trying to log in, I couldn't. And it was saying that the address was invalid. And the funny thing was, it was making me crabby because I couldn't log in to Radical Optimism.
Right,
but
right,
I kept trying. And so I got in almost about a half hour late. And so I missed the first half hour. But what I immediately felt was the radical optimistic energy that you omit. And I just wanted to say that whatever I missed, whatever you say, I've created an imagination casita up here. So I'm very sensitive to energy. And I just want to tell you, wow, you are the real deal. And I am so, like, I couldn't stop trying to get in. So I was trying, I was like, you know, on my phone, on my laptop, I just kept trying because I have to see for myself, you know, is something stopping me from from joining this video? Is it not meant for me? And I thought, I will not know until I'm in the video. Right. And being in the video, I just wanted to say, thank you. I'm so blessed to be here. And I'm so glad that I was able to break through. So I don't have a question. I have to, you know, rewatch it all. But I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. That's great. Nina?
Nan has been having video issues, but she has a question. So I'm going to
ask it.
Here we go.
Do you want to ask it for her? No? Carolyn, what's happening?
What's going on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear somebody.
Okay. I just wonder what you think about the following idea. The total number of minds in the universe is one. In fact, consciousness is a singularity phasing through all beings. I think it's from Vedanta philosophy.
Right.
I'm not sure. And I've just been walking around with this idea, and it changes the way I see everything.
You have a question?
What do you think? What do you think about that idea? How does it fit in the longer
conversation? So there's non-dual awakening, which is what you're pointing to. So basically what you just pointed to is non-dual awakening, which has been on the planet for thousands of years, which includes the individual journey. And like I said, the man that was sharing, you know, you can be incredibly awakened. And the person that's sitting next to you is, you know, thinking about lunch. This next level of evolutionary, what is being given, has to do with being in shared unity together. So it's beyond, it's actually called unilocal realization, which is, like I said, a longer conversation. But non-dual awakening and unilocal realization are in two different realms. They're actually not the same thing, just like rocks and living creatures. So we'd have to have a longer conversation, or you would need to, you know, learn how to enter into the shared unity. But basically, it really is a different phenomenon. So, and they're not, you can't compare them because they're in different worlds. Nina?
Can you hear me? I would identify as world-centric at this moment.
Yes.
I was actually in a call, I don't know, it was a while ago, and you were talking about the different thresholds.
Yes.
And that kind of helped me to develop a, well, I guess, more optimistic view of how things were, especially what you said that the hero's or the heroine's journey was just like the beginning and there was just more to it.
Yeah.
And just that idea that there is more and helped me. And I was just thinking, okay, all of what is going on with like the climate crisis and wars and stuff like that, it doesn't matter that much because there is something else. And that really, like, I was living with that mindset and I was quite okay. But now recently, I live in Germany. We have had a very warm winter. Usually there's a lot of snow in January. There was no snow at all. And I felt just like all of that energy around me, it was kind of like pulling me back towards this, you know, world-centric, I don't know, state or whatever. And I felt so... I felt like it was kind of drowning in it, and it felt really hard to
you have a question?
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I think my question is just on how to get to that cosmocentric, or how to stay there. Strategies or...
Well, it's not an individual strategy. That's the thing that everyone's going to come up against to some degree, because we're used to, it's all up to me, period. And what it is that's partly why Carolyn said we have a 24, we have a 7-day-a-week practice community with people that can go into what I'm pointing to every day, all the time, on a regular basis. But you can't do that with just anybody. Because if I try to do it with you and you're looking at your inner world and you're tracking your what your heart's feeling, you're inside yourself and we're not together. Mm-hmm. I can listen compassionately, but I'm not inside the same world. Mm-hmm. And so what I would say is that part of the radical positivity is to also, like, I've done tons of work with people in groups, and there's a million ways it can go wrong. And, you know, human beings are endlessly creative in both positive and negative ways. And basically, when you get other people and you start to enter into this larger nervous system in a real way with people that have integrity and discipline, and they know the value of practice, and they, you know, they're showing up in a very real way, then you're literally living in that, you know, you're living in that land. And when you look out into the world, you have something that sustains you and sustains the perspective and even deepens the capacity for you to see what's really happening. Mm-hmm. But doing that by yourself, I have no advice. I would advise not trying to do it by yourself. That's my advice. Okay, Samrit, we only have a few minutes left, so this may be the last one.
Hi, Patricia. Thank you for the lovely talk. And of course, I identify very much with the cosmic way of being. In fact, I've been like it all my life because I'm slightly over there somewhere. I don't know where exactly, but I'm not totally here. Never have been. And which creates a disconnect with fellow human beings, societal relationship formations, personal, that constant interpersonal turf wars going on or whatever, because people in their relational way of being, they can never understand where I'm coming from. And I, in all my honesty, cannot understand why they are being so restricted and limited and just bogged down, because I never am.
Do you have a question?
Yes. So I am happy to hear this defined as such, to kind of give it a framework as you have given it. But I am also trying to bring this cosmic consciousness, as you call it. Of course, and I embody it. I know what you're talking about. That radical optimism sense of kind of conducting things, or however, because that's totally how I am. I am trying to kind of overlay it into, which is a very worldly way of being, which is politics, right?
Okay, so just hold on a second. So the first thing that I want to further distinguish is that cosmocentric is always moving from the future. So it'd be like saying, like, 20 years ago, I was on the leading edge of a certain kind of music, but I'm still doing the same kind of music. You're no longer cosmocentric. You need to be cosmocentric 20 years, you know, like, now, is it even music? I mean, are they doing something? So the cosmocentric evolutionary impulse now has nothing to do with being on your own in that unique kind of, like, you know, there's everybody and then there's the people that are on the edge by themselves, right? There's actually the possibility of entering into something that the cosmocentric element is interested in, which is shared unity, which is different than a very novel kind of uniqueness.
Yes, and I'm trying to work it out now as to, because you talked about community formation and how this can be, this becomes a community project, and it's not something as a thing that you can achieve on your own
by yourself. Individually. But you have to enter into the consciousness with others. You haven't done that yet.
Yes, I'm definitely trying to break barriers there. There is an understanding, but there's always that ego barriers that other people have, which becomes difficult to break through beyond a point. But my question to you is, if I am thinking from a very political way of being, international politics, I would try to understand the repercussions or maybe the implications for somebody like that, and how could I bring that into, you know,
So We have 3 minutes. So the thing that I want to say is, until you've entered into this unilocal consciousness, you don't know how to apply it to anything. So until you're there, just like enlightened consciousness, if you've only ever known a certain world, until you enter into that with other humans, which is the tricky part, which is part of what we've been innovating in the last 14 years, is how do you bring humans beyond separation, not just negotiating their differences? I could be less interested. Negotiating differences from being different is just terrible. It's very hard. But entering into where existence is taking us in this creative union and shared unity, from there you can ask a question, but you can't ask a question until you know what the reality is. That's all. So I can't go further because we really only have 2 minutes. But I'm saying, you know, one of the things that is in the individual pathway is we think we already know because we've had 50 years of exploring certain things. And the humility has to come back. The maybe I have no idea, no matter how amazing my journey has been and the cosmic experiences and the various other things, what does it mean to enter into that as a larger nervous system with other humans? We can't go to the, you know, figure out going to the right restaurant with each other. You know, the divisive, you know, the individual development has come to a peak for many of us, not for everybody. So that's all I'm saying is, you know, it does require, you know, an egolessness, which is the source of the origination point. When you enter into that with other human beings and you don't already know, there is something that that existence is bringing forth that is quite unique. Okay. So I know part of what I've said is challenging. Part of it is, you know, maybe you already know everything. I have no idea. But the pointing to and the desire to go there yourself with others is the point. That's what existence needs. Humans who will voluntarily find their way beyond the boundaries and beyond all of, you know, to come into this shared unity. And it's no small thing. I work with amazingly gifted, attuned people. I mean, they're so beautiful. It's like a privilege. It is really a privilege. And even with the best of us, do you know what I mean? Like the ways that we strategize or the ways that we function in our survival with, you know, parts of the brain that get activated, et cetera. It's really a thing to find out how to enter into a different kind of existence together. And it's very beautiful. And it's very much, you know, the beginning of things, just like the cells weren't immediately rabbits. And it's also quite nourishing, and it makes it possible to be in the world and feel inspired by each other. Other human beings can be very uninspiring these days, right? You're kind of like, what am I doing here on the planet with these people? We can also be inspired, but to be consistently inside something where you experience so much love and you feel so much gratitude for the willingness of people to enter into something. It allows me to breathe every day and want to be here. So anyway, that's at least an hour's worth of what I have to say about that. And I'm sorry, we didn't get to everyone, but we're a minute over and I believe in ending on time. So if you do have anything you want to ask, you're more than welcome to send Carolyn@evolutionarycollective.com. And thank you so much for being here today. I really deeply appreciate your taking the time to show up. So thank you. Bye, everyone. We're going to unmute the lines and say goodbye.
Thank you, Patricia. Bye.